Play fake. Boot to the right. Looking down the field. Lamb. 10. 5. Victory. Cowboys win.
Sometimes a win isn't just a win. Sometimes you get an overtime walk-off, as the Cowboys did against the Patriots. Or you get the beating Lamar Jackson gave the Chargers. So today, Alex Smith walks us through the peaks and valleys of Week 6 in the NFL. And then LaChyna Robinson takes us to Chicago, where the Sky got a win unlike any other they've ever had.
Rebound, Parker! She's left alone! Mission accomplished! That's it! For the first time in franchise history, the Chicago Sky are WNBA champions!
I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, October 18th. This is ESPN Daily. Alex Smith, it is 12:11 a.m. Eastern. I've been watching football since 9:30 a.m. because of the whole Jaguars-Dolphins in London thing. I don't know if I hallucinated the end of this game or if it actually happened, but I don't know how we got overtime. I just know that we got overtime. Were you also confused by what we saw in this game, Alex?
It was a wild ending. It was a pretty kind of blah game up until the fourth quarter, and then it was definitely delivered at the end. Really, really interesting ending. I couldn't believe the refs called in on that booth review with all of that going on. A bunch of kind of crazy scenarios, and then the Steelers found a way to win a Steeler type win, defense and making a player here too.
Yeah, this was a Steeler type win, Alex. Also a Seahawks type of loss, insofar as there are so many elements of this that were mystifying. But luckily, clarity came in overtime, thanks to TJ Watt, who forces this fumble from Geno Smith. And look, I want to start with TJ Watt because you've played against him. You've been sacked by him. Cam Hayward said after the game, this is the greatest defensive player on the planet right now. What makes TJ Watt so special?
I mean, first off, I don't know where the Steelers keep finding these guys, these outside linebackers. I mean, I feel like for the last 30 years, they've had an outside linebacker that's an absolute game wrecker.
Yes.
And right now it's TJ Watt, and he is that. I mean, he is impressive. He is relentless. I mean, the play that wins the game, I mean, it's all second effort. It's a hustle play. He's getting double teamed. He gets chips, nothing there. He reverses. He just never stops. So you take a guy that's crazy talented and then kind of combine it with just, obviously insane effort and engine. And that's kind of the way their whole defense plays. That's their motto. That's that's part of their culture there on that side of the ball. And it showed up. They win games because of it. And tonight was a perfect example. And TJ Watt, I mean, the sack he had on the drive before, I felt like kept him in that game. And then here he seals the win. Just really, really impressive. And when he's healthy, I mean, I'm not sure there's an edge rusher out there that does what he does.
So his quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, is someone that I've been watching since puberty, I think, at this point, Alex. Like, I thought he was done at various points. But the Steelers, thanks to this game, thanks to beating a Seahawks team that is missing Russell Wilson, they started Geno Smith, of course. The Steelers are still alive. And I'm wondering, when you watch Ben in the twilight, presumably the twilight of his career, what do you see?
You know, I think I see that. Obviously, it's declined. Like, I think we all remember, Ben in his prime when, extremely, extremely athletic big man that could throw it all over the field, great improvisation, could turn something out of nothing and a ton of fun to watch. And clearly, I think his legs aren't there and haven't been there for a few years. And he did such a phenomenal job of transitioning to a guy that all of a sudden he was throwing for 5,000 yards in a season, and he was winning games with just his arm. And I think certainly that it is that he is obviously in the twilight, but I think he still has it in there at moments. You see him make throws, you see him make plays that are really, really elite. I think the question this year is, does he have enough? Does he have enough gas in the tank? Does that team have enough gas in the tank? And tonight was kind of a great test on both sides of the ball. These are two teams that both had playoff aspirations at the beginning of the season, both sitting at 2-3, you know, not loving where they're at. And it was kind of who's going to come out of this. This was a big game for both of these teams. And I think it was important for Pittsburgh to get this. I mean, a Russell-less Seahawks team, that Ben and the Steelers needed this win to go get this. They were at home. It was hard fought. But yeah, I mean, I think they didn't necessarily answer that, especially on offense. Ben didn't necessarily answer that tonight. They got the win, but I think that those questions are still lingering there moving forward. Do they have enough gas on offense to be the Steelers team that they've been the last, you know, 20 years with Ben at the helm? So I think that remains to be seen.
All right, Alex, we now need to turn to the roller coaster. I mean, roller coaster might be too calm, actually, for what happened when the Cowboys visited New England, because there were three lead changes late in the fourth quarter. There was a 49-yard field goal from Greg the Leg Zuerlein to get this to overtime. And in overtime, I mean, Dak Prescott throws it to CeeDee Lamb, and CeeDee Lamb, he is slowing down. He's strutting. He's waving goodbye with a smile on his face after getting this 35-yard touchdown. How did the Cowboys win this in the end? What did you see on that last drive?
First off, this game was maybe the game of the year so far. It was absolutely crazy, back and forth. The Cowboys, man, the Cowboys, first off, I mean, went up and down this field all day. I mean, they made some key mistakes in the red zone here and there and had some turnovers, but they were doing what they wanted to with the football. And especially there in the second half, fourth quarter, running the ball at will. And it just had a cumulative effect on this Patriots defense. You just kept seeing these safeties get closer and closer to the line of scrimmage. And finally ran a little play action bootleg.
Throws it down the field. It's caught at the 10. And this game is over. The Cowboys win it. CeeDee Lamb.
They are extremely talented. I mean, they only stopped themselves today. They had a few holding calls, some kind of bonehead turnovers here and there. But they put up 35 and easily could have put up 50.
So the Cowboys, I mean, they put up 445 passing yards. That's the most yards Bill Belichick has ever surrendered while coaching the Patriots. You mentioned the defensive backs. What was it like? What's it like to be on the field just running constantly, getting burned like that? I mean, by the end of it, it looked like they were dead. I mean, they were gassed.
I mean, I felt like everybody was gassed except Dak Prescott. You know, even the Cowboys receivers were gassed at the end. You know, the the plays that they made to get it to overtime, the third and 25 that he hit to CeeDee Lamb over the middle was a heck of a play. They had just gotten a personal foul called, took them out of field goal range, and they hit a deep in cut over the middle of the field to help them tie the game and take it to overtime. But everybody was gassed by the end of this, and it looked like it on the final play. I mean, when he hit CeeDee Lamb, they all had very little left, if anything, and it was a thriller of a game. Mac Jones, give him a lot of credit. He stood in there toe to toe with this offense and Dak Prescott, and I think he earned a lot of respect from his teammates today.
Yeah, no, there's a world in which Mac Jones is being carried on people's shoulders, you know, in some sort of like parade, because what happened we got to get to Trayvon Diggs here. He picks off Mac Jones, takes it to the house. It's a pick six. I mean, this is now making him one of the two players since 1950 with at least one interception in each of his team's first six games. He's halfway to Night Train Lane's single season record in the NFL of 14 picks. It felt like that was going to be a backbreaker, but on the next play from scrimmage, I mean, how do you describe what happened to him there? Because that was the exact opposite pretty much.
Yeah, it was a crazy, crazy couple plays. You know, I think the thing I'll say with Trayvon Diggs is I don't know if I've ever seen a corner with the ball skills that he has. And obviously, you know, knowing his background of being a receiver, his brother's obviously an all-pro receiver in the league. You just can't afford to make very big mistakes around him, if any. You know, if you leave a ball behind, if a ball gets tipped, I mean, this guy's ball skills are ridiculous.
It's intercepted. He's got another one, and he's got a field ahead of him. Diggs is going to take it to the end zone. Unbelievable.
He's got more touchdowns than his brother. You just got to be really careful, I think, when you challenge him. You know, he's that kind of player. He's that gifted. I don't want to say this against all DBs, but there's usually a reason they play defense. Pablo. You know, they're usually the offensive rejects. And Trayvon Diggs, though, I think obviously a special player, but I again, the ball skills just jump out at me that you can't make many mistakes around him because he's going to make you pay. And then they come right back at him. You know, he gets the pick six to the house, and the very next offensive play, you thought Mac Jones just lost the game for the Patriots, and they run an out and up on him.
Deep ball, and somehow they blew the coverage. It's Bourne to the end zone. One play later, the Patriots strike magic. And guess what? Double move on Diggs. They come right back. Diggs,
I do have to say he got a bit lucky on this. I thought the free safety made a horrendous play. He was really, really deep for some reason. Obviously, they had the lead and took a horrible angle and ends up being, you know,
yes,
a 75-yard touchdown pass to take the lead. And what a turn of events. Mac Jones went from, you know, the guy that just lost the game to all of a sudden throws the game winner, going after the same, you know, defensive player of the year at this point. A crazy, crazy turn of events. It was a ton of fun. I was going nuts by myself here in the hotel room watching it. It was a lot of fun.
So from all of the suspense of that game to Cleveland now, where there was little of it, because the Arizona Cardinals, Alex, I mean, 37-14, it's a destruction of the Browns. They're now 6-0. They didn't even have their head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, in all of this because he had a positive COVID result. What does this win tell you about the Cardinals?
I thought this was a bit of a statement win. I do want to temper it. I know Cleveland's both starting tackles were out of the game. I know Nick Chubb wasn't playing. It's easy to look at this Arizona Cardinals team and kind of say, you know, they play in a dome in Arizona. They play in the air conditioning. They're a bit of a pretty team. They're flashy plays. And they go to Cleveland on the road. This is a playoff team last year in Cleveland. They're tough. They run the football. It is crazy windy, drizzly, nasty day in Cleveland. And they went in there and absolutely dismantled the Browns. I mean, it wasn't even close. The Cardinals' defensive line looked dominant in the defensive side of the ball. And then Kyler Murray, I thought, just was, again, another MVP caliber day. I don't know who you stop on that offensive side of the ball. They got so many weapons, and now they have to throw Zach Ertz in the mix, you know, another premier tight end. So I thought it was, you know, this is a game I thought in the past on the road in a cold weather game, you know, kind of nasty game that I hadn't seen this out of the Cardinals these last couple of years. I thought this was definitely showed their growth and leadership. And again, their head coach wasn't even there. Starting center is also out. It was impressive. I think showed a lot of the leadership they got going on in that locker room.
Yeah, so look, Kyler Murray now climbs to the top of the MVP horse race. I understand that. The four touchdowns, all of it. But this team, I mean, are they the best team in the NFC to you? Are they the best team in the NFL to you? How bullish are you on a team that also defensively, yeah, goes ahead and sacks Baker Mayfield 5 times?
I mean, I think the NFC is loaded right now. I mean, I think you could pick 5 teams in the NFC that are all pretty evenly matched and on any given Sunday, you know, could take the other one out. So I'm a little hesitant in that sense. I do think the Cardinals are for real, though. I think they are in that. Obviously, they're bona fide. This wasn't some hot start that I think they're going to flame out. I think they got the makings to be in this, you know, for the long haul. But like I said, I do think the NFC is deep. There's some really good teams there, I think, that are going to have a say. So I think it's going to be a ton of fun as the season goes on.
And speaking of fun, by the way, Alex, I need to ask you whether you ever did what Aaron Rodgers just pulled off in Chicago after the break.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at lq.com.
So entering this weekend, Alex, the game that I was most excited for was Chargers-Ravens. And this was in Baltimore. This was two of the three one-loss teams in the AFC. And the Ravens go ahead and win 34-6. And Lamar Jackson, in the process, becomes the winningest quarterback under the age of 25 since the merger. He moves past Dan Marino. I forget all the time that Lamar Jackson is not even 25 years old. So how impressed are you by what he's been able to achieve at 24?
Yeah, I mean, it's unexplainable. It's amazing. I still just go back to the fact that we were talking about this guy. This guy was asked to play receiver coming out of college. You know, again, like, it just baffles me. I love that he's kind of thrown, you know, in the face of all the old crusty NFL, you know, scouts and execs out there. I thought I was so pumped to watch this game. You know, obviously with the Bills, I think, kind of out in front of the AFC, these are kind of the next two teams. And again, this was a dominant win by the Ravens in all three phases of the game. They completely shut down a really good Chargers offense that was red hot. Chargers barely had 200 yards of offense. The Ravens, you know, lost their entire running back room in the preseason. They went out and signed three old veterans and Le'Veon Bell, Devontae Freeman, and Latavius Murray. And I think they put a ton of the slack on Lamar's shoulders, and he has responded. And I think in this sense that even watching last week with the Colts, this team is way more multidimensional and balanced than they have been in the past. I mean, in the last couple of years, obviously this team has been dominant in the run, but to look at how Lamar is throwing the ball, the clip that he is throwing it at, the rate, the completion percentage, the efficiency, and then you combine that with their run game at this point, I think they're even better than they've been. I think Lamar's playing unbelievable football. I think he's right there on the heels of Kyler in the MVP race. And he showed it again today. I mean, he was making plays all over the place. There were a couple times in the red zone. The Chargers were so scared against the pass, they were playing cover two in the red zone.
Wait, so when you see cover two in the red zone, Alex, explain what that means. What does that say about what Lamar is doing?
To see a team play cover two in the red zone against the Ravens in the last couple of years would have been unheard of. You never would have seen it. This is a team that runs the football so efficiently. You have to account for Lamar. So you're at least getting one safety. A lot of times both safeties in the mix to account for those guys because they are so good. The fact that the Chargers were playing, you know, split safeties, two safeties deep, really, I think, trying to take away the pass game in a lot of situations, it's a dangerous combination. And I think that's an element that they haven't had in the past. And I think, again, it speaks to, I think, Lamar's progression, this passing game's progression. I think they can do more. They have more balance than they've had the last couple of years.
Wait, so Lamar Jackson now as this lethal passer. I mean, the fact that he's developed into this, Alex, the fact that he was asked to become a wideout out of college, what does that say about the scouting of quarterbacks in retrospect now?
I mean, I'm glad that I think it's in the past. I mean, I think you look at the guys that are out there on Sundays making plays at this point. And I'm not sure we would have seen them 25 years ago, 20 years ago, even. And I'm thankful that, you know, that is behind us, because to see what these guys are doing on Sunday, the numbers they're putting up. And I think quarterback play across the league is at a crazy, crazy high level right now. And I think it's because these guys are finally getting opportunities to come in and use their talents. And again, I think it makes for a better game. I know it's a ton of fun to watch these guys that they can do, and then getting the opportunity to go out there and do it.
So a city that is not enjoying the level of quarterback play you've described right now would be Chicago. And we saw Aaron Rodgers, Alex, go in there with the Packers, the NFC North currently on the line. They win 24-14, but that's not the thing that I'm here to ask you about. I'm here to ask you about the fact that Aaron Rodgers runs it in the fourth quarter, and he lets everybody know about it.
Scrambles to his right, pumps and runs, and Rodgers is inside the pylon.
Right on cue, Joe.
He explains this after the game. There is a woman who apparently flipped him the double bird.
I looked up in the stands, and in the front row, all I saw was a woman giving me the double bird. So I'm not sure exactly what came out of my mouth next.
And he's obviously talking about an ownership of a franchise. I mean, look, he's 22-5 against Chicago. I get that. I'm here to ask you, though, did you ever tell a fan that you owned them after they flipped you off?
Pablo, I've never done that. I've never thought about it.
I'm shocked, Alex. I'm shocked to hear that.
I know you are. I'm not sure any of those words have ever come out of anybody's mouth, you know, in an end zone in a division rivalry game. I mean, how cool is it to see that on the heels of all the stuff that's happened this offseason with Aaron? You know, they lose the opener, they get crushed by the Saints. Everybody's talking about his love for the game is over. You know, he should retire and hang it up. A bunch of people that claim to be knowing him. And then to see the run they've been on. And again, this is also, as Aaron's gotten older, he's got a bit of Zen in him now. I mean, this is meditating Aaron Rodgers. He's very even keel. And to see him let loose like that, get fired up, I think shows how much it means to him, shows how much it means to this team, how much he is loving what he's doing. I thought it's great to see. You know, when you get in those lines, you put in so much. These guys put in so much work and sacrifice. And to go make a big play like that on the road, Chicago's crowd was amped up because this was a close game until the you know, midway through the fourth quarter.
That's right.
And Chicago's crowd was jacked up this entire game, really, really into it. You know, this is one of the oldest rivalries in football. And
oh, they smelled blood, Alex. They smelled blood.
Yeah. And then for him to make that play with his feet, the pump fake and run it in, and his teammates are going crazy there in Soldier Field in the corner. And I love it. I love that it came out. You know, I love that the fan was giving him the double birds, and I love that he yelled it back. I think that's what's great about sport. I think that's what's great about football and the NFL in general. And for all those people, I think that said Aaron's not into it, his heart's not into it, he doesn't love the game, all this nonsense, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I love playing in Soldier Field. You know, I said this week I have a lot of respect for the fans. I'm sure there's a little bit of respect coming back my way, not a lot of love, I'm sure. But had a lot of great moments on this field, a lot of great battles.
So I want to spin over to the Alex Smith Bowl, as we've been calling it at ESPN Daily, because the Chiefs visit the Washington football team, Alex. The Chiefs win 31-13. But through this game, there were like moments of great, like existential dread if you root for Kansas City, because this looked like a game that was going to go the other way. I do want to ask about Patrick Mahomes and these turnovers, because now it's 13 on the year for the team. The most through six games that an Andy Reid coach team has had since 2012. That was his last season in Philly, incidentally. What's behind all these mistakes, do you think?
I mean, I think for one, you know, they've been behind in games. There's been situations where they've had to try to come back and make plays and win. And not that we haven't seen them do that in the past, but they've had to do it every week. And I think in the end, it's going to catch up with you. And I think we've seen that to start this year, especially with Patrick. There's been times I think he's been trying to make these crazy plays that we're so accustomed to him doing. And it's gotten him a couple times. He's also, the last couple of weeks, he's thrown picks that have hit receivers right in the hands. You know, so I do want to be careful. And I think that's kind of the nature of playing quarterback. Sometimes you get the breaks. I think that's just kind of the nature of the position. And when we analyze the interception, you know, stat so carefully, they have had a ton of fumbles. I think it's something that, you know, obviously I know they're harping on and need to get corrected, but they have put the ball on the ground too many times in some key situations. And it's, you know, they've got some losses directly because of it. But I thought this offense looked like the Chiefs offense of old. You know, Patrick today looked like what he's normally looks like. Last week versus the Bills, I thought he looked a bit rattled. I thought his feet were a little off. The defensive line was getting there. Today, I thought he was dynamic in the second half, especially. I think they converted eight straight third downs to seal off this game. And Patrick was doing a ton of it with his feet, moving around in the pocket like he does, finding windows, using his legs, eyes downfield. I mean, he was whipping the ball all over the place. He had a shovel pass late in this game on the run to Kelce that was insane play, and he had another Fran Tarkenton pocket play running around and threw a ball back across his body that was so special. I thought this was a good get back on track game for them.
So one of these picks, Alex, it was as bad as we've seen him throw football.
Mahomes lost it, and Mahomes floats it up, intercepted. Big mistake, Bobby McCain there.
He was falling down. I understand that, but it was awful. There's no way around that. The other one, though, that was a good throw that just went off of Tyreek Hill's hands into the arms of the defensive back and into the arms of the defender. And that is the second straight week this has happened. And this is why Patrick's mother, Randy, went on Twitter and said this, quote, "Okay, people, that should not be an interception on the quarterback. That should be a fumble or anything else. Just putting it out there. Go Chiefs." And so I want to ask you about this legislative proposition, Alex. Do you agree with Mama Mahomes' bold idea here on redoing all of these statistics?
I would love to side with her on this, but no, absolutely not. I mean, this is the nature of the position. Right. I mean, if we go back and look at how many times Brett Favre hit a defender in the hands, but they just didn't catch it because he threw too hard. Right. And this is the nature of loved ones. You know, when you're in the stands watching this, it does remind me of the Super Bowl when, you know, Tom a few years back with the Patriots and Giselle right. said that he couldn't catch it as well as throw it, you know, and I get it. You know, like I said, these games mean a lot and, you know, I know Randy obviously is cheering hard for her son and rightfully so, but Tyreek makes a lot of plays too. So I know Patrick would take a couple bad beats here and there.
Oh yeah, you dump it to Tyreek Hill 4 yards and he runs at 76 and yes, you get credit as the quarterback for that one too, so it's all fair, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. You get the 76-yard touchdown. I was the amazing recipient of the Tyreek Hail Mary.
There it is to Hill. The whole brigade around him. Hill gets around Standard.
Look at Hill go! Impossible! Touchdown, Kansas City!
Where I threw it 10 yards and he ran it another 50 for a touchdown. So, you know, it's just the way it goes sometimes.
Alex Smith, that is a remarkably zen perspective and also one that speaks to the fact that you are a quarterback who is in retirement. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Pablo.
All right, up next, we make a call to our friend LaChyna Robinson, who is in Chicago, where the WNBA Finals have everyone feeling the exact opposite of zen.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
LaChyna Robinson, where are you right now?
Well, Pablo, I am right across the street from Wintrust Arena, and my plan was to talk to you on ESPN Daily from my room. Unfortunately, my mom is with me on this trip and has taken over with her Marvin Gaye and her bottle of wine that she bought from CVS, so I'm displaced. However, I was going to find a little quiet spot where I can get with you and talk about this crazy game for.
Yeah, no, LaChyna, so you've been displaced by a party in your hotel room. You just left the party that is consuming all of Chicago right now. I mean, this was the deciding game that gave Chicago their first WNBA championship. It's the first one in franchise history. It's a sellout crowd. They beat the Mercury 80-74.
Parker, she's left alone.
What was it like in the building?
It was nuts. And I haven't even had the opportunity to post some of the video clips that I have of the crowd as Chicago was making their push down the stretch. I've always loved Chicago as a city, but I gained so much respect for their sports fan base. You know, there was a Bears game today. There was a lot of reasons, excuses, I guess I will say, why people, you know, could not be there or support Chicago. That building was loud. But I think that was the shocking aspect of this for me when it comes to Chicago, is that they've never won a championship. Like, this is their first, and how quickly people caught on to how big of a deal this is. And you do have to credit, listen, the matchup was great. Candace Parker, Diana Taurasi, like even the average kind of casual WNBA fan wants to see Diana Taurasi play. They want to see Brittany Griner play. So the matchup was great. But for a city that, you know, had not yet won and had just moved venues a couple years ago, like there's some people in Chicago that haven't even realized that Wintrust Arena is a thing where their team is playing. So all things considered, this was one of the loudest crowds by far, and definitely for a team that's winning their first trophy.
Yeah. So look, the way this happened, the way it all went down, I mean, Chicago, LaChina, they were down 14 at one point. And then Candace Parker, she ties the game with a little more than 2 minutes left.
Chicago down three. Vandersloot gives it up. Parker to tie.
And then Chicago takes the lead for good, thanks to Stephanie Dolson.
Dolson for the lead. Chicago in front.
And the Phoenix Mercury, having that dominant lead, losing it, the momentum shift, the energy. What was it like to watch this game flip like that?
I was sitting on the set with Sue Bird, as I've told you on a number of occasions, is the best part of this experience, and Carolyn Peck. And we were like, we're going back to Phoenix. And all of a sudden, there were these series of missed layups by a number of Phoenix Mercury players. Even Diana Taurasi herself was right at the rim. And it was just these momentum breaking misses, you know, in a layup situation that seemed to shift the momentum. And kudos to Chicago. They took advantage of every miss. Allie Quigley could not have been bigger in the second half. I mean, she ended up with 26 points, but her 5 3-pointers, we've been saying all series, the 3-point line is the differentiator for Chicago, because they're going to get their points in the paint. But when they're hitting threes, that's when they're at their best. And here comes, you know, DePaul graduate from right here in Chicago, Allie Quigley, who gave them the offensive punch they needed. But you can't say enough about that shot by Candace, her plays. And then that pick and roll by Stephanie Dolson and Courtney Vandersloot was unstoppable down the stretch. I mean, it was just, it felt like magic. I mean, the number of easy buckets that Phoenix missed, it was like, this was destiny for the Chicago Sky.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like magic. Courtney Vandersloot passed like magic. She had 15 assists, LaChina, 10, 15, and 9 in this game. And look, you mentioned the hometown stuff. I mean, Candace Parker, like, that's her story here, right? This is her second career title, but this was her first season with the Sky in her hometown of Chicago. She spoke about this with all of the pride in the world.
I mean, I got the whole city here. We got the whole city here. And it's just amazing how Chicago supports. I mean, we're champions for life now.
What does this mean for her? How would you characterize the season Candace Parker has had?
Well, the thing about Candace Parker's legacy is that it's kind of hinged on the number of championships she's won in her career. Every statistical category has her fingerprints on it. Double doubles, playoff scoring, she's one of the best. You know, she's climbing the charts as far as career rebounds and points, all of those things. She's now been a defensive player of the year. But one championship is often frowned upon. And I think, you know, I can speak for myself as a WNBA fan and supporter that things weren't looking good in LA for her at all. You know, Derek Fisher just hasn't really figured it out, quite honestly, at the helm. Is, you know, he's the GM as well. And so it was like, okay, we know that Parker probably doesn't have that much longer to play. Is Derek Fisher going to be able to get this group together in time for her to win a championship? And I don't think anyone thought that Candace Parker would ever leave LA. She was the LA spark. She was their identity. She was synonymous with their franchise, but she's from Chicago. And we've been saying that over the last few years, Chicago Sky is such a great team. They are so close to doing something really big, but they had lost in the first couple of rounds of the playoffs the last 2 years. It was like, can they get to a semifinal series? Can they make it to the finals? And James Wade said this over and over this year. He said, without Candace Parker, we were only knocking on the screen door of a championship. With her, were knocking on the big door, the house door. And so she was the missing piece. And yes, it was her championship experience, her confidence, but just how she breathed life into her teammates. It makes everyone feel like they can reach the sky. I mean, that has been the fun part to watch of this journey, is how she's impacted and grown her teammates just by being who she is.
And in all of these names that we've mentioned, I mean, Kalia Copper was the MVP here. And she credited her success after this game to all of the work she put in.
I worked so
How do you see this from Kalia Copper? What else can you say about her and how she played in game four?
You know, I didn't expect Kalia Copper to look as comfortable as she did on the big stage. We knew she was having a fantastic season. We knew last year that she was separating herself as one of the best players in this league. It's a tough thing to do with a trophy on the line. Like everyone, when in the regular season, we're like, okay, we're playing for positioning, we're playing for seeding, great. But can you show up in the biggest moments? And the way that she's played in these playoffs and the finals with the number of 20-point performances, the high level of efficiency, I just didn't see it coming. And she just did a masterful job and is the kind of player that ceiling is only going up. I don't know who's got enough money to pay her next season, but she is about to get a big check as a free agent. And it, you know, I mean, her athleticism, her jumping ability, they're just, I mean, her game is just a lot of fun to watch, her explosiveness, and it was all on full display in these finals.
Yeah, no, the physicality of that matchup specifically, Kalia Copper versus Diana Taurasi Lechina. I mean, they both got tees. They both got technical fouls in the first quarter, right? And we're not surprised by this, given how Diana is wired. What was she missing? What was Diana Taurasi, maybe the GOAT? What was she missing out there in this one?
Well, you don't want to take anything away from what Chicago did, right? So defensively, they're long, they're athletic, they can put a number of different, you know, looks on Diana, but again, it was mostly Kalia Copper. I don't want to take anything away from that. But Diana has not been healthy. She's got a broken bone in that ankle. You know, well, first they were just calling it an ankle sprain. We found out from Holly Rowe is much more than that. She's got a broken bone in that ankle and was pushing through a lot of pain. You know, and had the birth of her daughter that was pending. And then, you know, she was born in the middle of the finals. And so, and no excuses. And I don't think Diana would make any excuses either. I just don't think she was healthy.
Well, so all of this, Lechina, sets up the post game. And the post game has become a thing now, because you mentioned Brittany Griner, Diana Taurasi, Skylar Diggins-Smith was the other player of the Phoenix Mercury, supposed to show up at the postgame press conference. And instead, we get word that nobody from the Phoenix Mercury is showing up. And this is something that has already generated controversy, Lechina. I'm curious how you see this.
You know, obviously, Pablo, as someone in the media who relies on the availability of players, it's disappointing for us, right? Because you've got a story to write. We want to hear from the players. What happened down the stretch? What did you see? It's a learning opportunity for all of us. So that's, and from that standpoint, it's disappointing. As a former player, I don't know if you watch the post game of the semifinals between Vegas and Phoenix, but Asia Wilson was distraught to the point where she had to almost be carried off the floor by her teammates. Everyone had showered and was ready for a post-game presser. Asia was still in her jersey and was sobbing. I don't get any kind of comfort or joy from speaking to a player that is not able to gather themselves in that situation, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, Asia was almost like, she wasn't going to be any good in that situation, because she was so upset and so heartbroken that nothing that she could have given us in the media at that point was going to help anyone in that situation. I kind of side with the athlete there. You know, I'm disappointed that no one from Phoenix came to speak. But I actually ran into Skylar Diggins-Smith after the game, and she would not have been able to conduct herself in a media post-game presser. She would not have. I mean, she was just that torn apart. I get it. It's a profession. All of us have a job. But I also, again, as a former athlete, part of my heart goes out to them and also feels like it's not often beneficial for anyone, depending on what mental state the athlete may be in that scenario.
No, LeJohn, I hear you on that. There are all these competing interests. One of them is the human interest. One of them is the empathy for a human being that you just described, mental health being a consideration always. But the other interest, of course, is journalism, is what we do here, which is ask people hard questions after events that matter. And this was, of course, the postgame of the deciding game of a championship, which I feel like does matter. This is part of the job. And part of the upside of answering those questions, of course, is coverage. And this is a season, LeChina, in which coverage has been a focal point. This is the 25th year of the WNBA. When you step back and look at the trend lines around your sport, this particular controversy aside, how do you see all of that?
A couple of things, Pablo. You know, I feel very proud of the WNBA when you look at 25 years of existence, because I remember when people were saying this league will not last. And despite all of those challenges and the hurdles, it's been around 25 years. And so there's a lot of people, players, front office folks, owners to celebrate who really believed in this product. Because when you see a sold out arena here in Chicago, when you see a sold out arena in Phoenix, when people are just so excited about the WNBA, and we have that visual on television, and you're watching Brittany Griner dunk, and you're watching game winning shots, and you're watching, you know, Candace Parker play like a point guard at the forward spot, you see just how beautiful the game of basketball is in this league and how talented the players are. So one end of it, I'm feeling 25 years, wow, like they've made it much further than anyone would have ever expected and how they've been counted out over the years. However, it also makes me sad that the league is still not given the coverage, the respect, the sponsorship. These women are leaving. Brittany Griner saw her after the game. You know, they want her to leave and go play in Russia in 10 days. Mm. And to make the kind of money that Brittany deserves, that's where she has to go. And so that's where I'm sad. That here is, we have this amazing product and we're 25 years in and we're still talking about the lack of visibility, the lack of investment. People are still feeling like women's sports don't deserve the platform and the opportunities. We have so long, so far to go. So while you appreciate what has been done and how powerful these women have been on the social justice front and how they've spoken out for the LGBTQ plus community and a league that's 70% Black women have you know, push through some of the barriers that there are for minorities in this country and for women in general to take a stance and to use their platforms. It's, you know, you're proud of all of those things, but there's still a lack of respect for the WNBA. And I hope that there were a ton of people watching this game tonight, saw that full arena, saw the story of Candace Parker, saw the play on the floor and said, these women deserve more, because they do.
LeChina Robinson, thank you as always for joining us. And I can hear in the distance your mom strengthening her grip on your hotel room. So it feels like you should probably get back there pretty soon.
Yeah, I've got to take that out of her hands right now, Pablo, or I might get kicked out of the hotel altogether.
No, I just hope for the video from your mom's championship parade.
I will try to get some clips, but, you know, I've said this before on Twitter that my mom will probably be the end of my career at ESPN if I've ever really let her just loose and to be herself. So I will be editing whatever film is posted. Trust that.
I respect your journalistic ethics.
I appreciate it, my friend. Thanks so much again.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.